Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Hey, lady listeners.
Hey.
Oh, man. I just took the first sip of a Diet Coke, and it burns so good. Like, the Coke in a can, there's just nothing better.
Coke or Diet Coke?
Well, I'm drinking Diet Coke, but soda in a can, like in a cold can, and you get that, like, that first initial burn. Am I alone in this? Fuck you guys.
No, I'm that way, but only but with fountain soda. Like, I love a fountain soda.
When it burns your nose a little bit.
Yeah, but I like the way a fountain soda tastes, but you don't get the burn like you do on a cold can.
No, that's true. You don't. So, welcome to Read Me Romance.
Welcome.
Welcome. It's Molly O'Keefe week here at Read Me Romance. We're really excited. I'm a big fan. I'm a really big fan of Molly O'Keefe's. I love the way she writes. She wrote a book called Our Last Chance, and it's a second chance story between a married couple, and, like, divorce is on the table. The papers have been submitted, and our heroine is back. Natalie, for one last chance with her husband, Jack. And I read it last night and I emailed Molly this morning and I was like, this made my chest hurt, which is a sign of a good book because that doesn't happen for me really anymore. It really takes a certain kind of book to do that to me. I don't know.
Emotionally invested.
Yeah, because like, I think it's the pitfalls of being a romance author that it's really hard to get lost in a book now. Like, all I can do is try and figure out what the author is doing. I'm like, what's this device for? Where is she going with this? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I can see that. You look at more of the mechanics of it.
Yeah. And it takes a lot to get me lost in a book.
Don't you think more so with romance than other genres? Because when I read, you know, when I don't read romance books and they're like suspense or something, I never think about the writing process as much as I do when it's romance. I mean, hardly ever do I think about it.
Never. I never think about it when I'm reading like a Tana French book or like a romance or like a suspense. Even romantic suspense, I can typically get lost. But when it's straight up contemporary, mm-hmm. I'm always just like trying to figure out.
Because you write it.
Yeah, because I can feel the push and the pull, you know, of what the author is doing. Like, she's giving the hero a little bit of the upper hand, and then she's giving it to the heroine. And I'm like, okay, where are we going to end up? Where are we going to land?
See that though.
Yeah. But I really like Molly's writing. She writes really authentic characters that are super flawed, and these characters are no exception. But the books I've read from her that I really loved were Bad Neighbor and Baby Come Back. The first one is Bad Neighbor, and the sequel is Baby Come Back. And
I think you've told us about Bad Neighbor before. I feel like we've had that conversation.
I think so. It's maybe like
she just told me to read Bad Baby. She said I'm going to really
Bad Baby. Baby Come Back.
Baby Come Back. Sorry, I mixed them up.
Wait a minute. Bad Baby is a whole other book. Like,
I mean, like,
what's the plot of that book?
Well, she's the baby, and she's the baby of the family, and now he's her baby, and she doesn't want a baby because then she won't be a baby anymore. I always think about that. Do you remember that in the movie Overboard?
I remember the movie.
The movie Overboard with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. I love that movie so much. She's talking to her mom or whatever, and she's like, well, maybe I should have a baby. I think that's the line. Elby's going to murder me because she knows this movie line for line. And the mom says, like, if you have a baby, you won't be the baby. that always stayed with me, maybe because I'm a middle child. So
that's how I talked my kid out of having another baby. He wanted me to have another one. I was like, well, if I have a baby, you won't be the baby. And he's like, oh.
He's like,
never mind.
Hold up a tick. Yeah.
So
does your daughter ever ask you about having any more kids?
All the time.
No.
Yeah.
Does she? What do you say?
I just tell her that she's enough for us, like, that we had. I don't know. I think I've just given her several different excuses, but, you know, mostly, I think when she gets older, I'm going to explain to her that, like, I don't know. It was just really hard, the baby years for me, and pregnancy and labor.
You can't be like, you were really difficult.
I know.
Like, what are you going to say?
I don't know. I'll probably blame it on my husband because he's 14 years older than me. I'll be like, your dad was just too old for a second one. So.
But no, I think that's a valid point. Like the, you know, we were actually talking about this last night. My youngest daughter, she had her graduation pictures made at school for her pre-K class. So she's graduating from pre-K. She's going to kindergarten. And every morning when I drop my oldest one off, who's in second grade, she's like, that's going to be my school next year. That's going to be my school. I'm going to be a big kid. And I'm just like, shut up from the front seat, you know, like really emotional about it. So we were talking about that last night. And I was just like, okay, guys, one of us needs to have a baby. And I was like, not it. I was like, can you imagine? Like one of my close friends I just visited in San Diego, she is 40 and she just had her second one and he's 4 months old. And I was over at their house and I was like, we're the same age. Like, how are you doing this? You know, like she has a 3-year-old in the other room that's crying and doesn't want to go to sleep. And she's got a baby that she's nursing. And I'm just like, where can I help? Oh my God. Like, I'm overwhelmed watching you. And I just think like, I can't imagine, like physically I could have another child right now. But I can't imagine emotionally how that would wreck me.
I feel like women have the capacity for so much. You just do it. You know, like you just put your head down and do it. Like I had a friend who our babies, we had them at the same time. We met in a music class in Brooklyn and like our babies were, I think, 5 months old. And like we got through that first year and a half together. Like we would meet somewhere, we would get our kids in the strollers and we would just walk and talk for hours and eat cupcakes and drink cappuccinos and like just complain. And then I was like, I'm done. She's like, I'm done. We're not having any more. And then she got pregnant and I was like, traitor, traitor. But no, it was like really difficult for me. I don't know if I just like, I like really like to be alone and I really like having alone time and quiet time. And I just... like the labor too was really difficult for me. I like people say you forget, and I have not forgotten a single second of that pain. And that like I have not. Do you have like what was your labor like, Mel? Did you have like
it was bad?
It was bad.
10-pound baby.
Oh my!
That wouldn't come out.
It was massive.
And then they ended up having to cut him out after like 12 hours. But
so that was what kills it. You went through labor, right? And then you ended up with a C-section. Is that right? Is that what
you were? But you got to keep your tight pussy?
Yes.
That's great.
Like, he never, like, even went down. They couldn't get him to, I guess it's like, they call it a -1 or -2, a +1. He wasn't going anywhere. He was too big. But I wouldn't do it again. But I think some people get good babies and some people get bad babies. And I don't mean like the tip baby is terrible. I just mean some babies cry more and more needy and some are like really good. Cause you'll see people with some of their babies and you're like, that baby never cries. You're like, I know, not like her sister. Sister's a bad baby. This is a good baby. I don't know why.
I think it has a lot to do with the mom's energy. Like, I think if I had a second child, like it would be the most mellow child because I would just have been through it. Like, you've been through it. No?
I don't agree. Way too controlling. We're both shaking our heads. No. No. This baby is not on my schedule.
No, I think that, and I think it's very interesting. I think babies come out with a personality. And I say that because I watched this show called Outdaughtered. Have you ever heard of it?
I've seen the previews for it while watching something else.
So while watching this, the last time I watched it, they did a show of the kids from when they were born, like coming out to now. And they're like 3. Those babies came out with the personalities that they have when they're like 3. And there's like 5 of them. You can tell which one. Like, I'll be like, that one's Riley. You can tell it just by the way they're acting. And she's been that way since she was born.
So they think they're born with personalities. Yeah.
Yes, that's, they are born with personalities.
That's crazy to think about.
Now, how was your pregnancy, Mel, since you had like knowing your kid, you know, a little like I do now, your son? I just wondered like if the personality is reflected in the layer or in the I don't want to say gestation, what's it called? The pregnancy.
Gestation. Sounds like a lizard or something.
While you're pregnant.
Well, he does love cake and steak, so maybe a little bit.
Did you have a good pregnancy, though?
I gained a lot of weight, like 100 pounds.
Oh, that's so awesome. All I think about is how much
so awesome.
I know. I think about how much she got to eat. Just, like, eat it.
My daughter was 2 weeks late, and I just remember going to this Haagen-Dazs store in where I lived. and getting a giant chocolate milkshake, like the biggest one they had, sitting down on the curb with my swollen ankles and my baby like a week and a half, 2 weeks late, and just drinking that without taking a breath. It was so great.
It was awesome. I remember they had, or whenever you go to the store, they have mini cakes now. They're like smaller. I remember eating one and I was like eating it, talking to somebody, and then I put my fork down and the cake was gone. I was eating it straight out of the container thing and I was like, it's all gone. I ate it all. It's the whole fucking thing.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
No, I just like, I was, when I, so my labor, they had to induce me because my baby was so late. I just remember that, like, I don't know if you guys or your husbands watch golf, but Rory McIlroy is like this Irish golfer. And my husband was super excited that this Irish golfer was like gonna win some fucking tournament. I can't think of the name. They're just, golf is always on in my house. Like, I'm over it.
The Masters?
Probably, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was his, he was in his first major tournament, headed for a win while I was in labor. And that, so the TV was on in the labor room and he was watching Rory McIlroy golf. And so to this day, like, I hate Rory McIlroy because I was going through these contractions and it was in severe pain and all I could see was his fucking face across the room. To me, it's his fault in my, to my way of thinking, but.
Of course.
I remember the girl I'm going with this, for this wedding, it's her wedding I'm going with, I was sitting in labor, and I'm in labor, and they wouldn't let you eat, because I got induced too, and her and Rob are like standing over my bed, talking about they're going to go get cheeseburgers, and my mom will keep an eye on me. I was like, I'm going to murder both of you.
You're like, great, ice chips. I went to this hospital, like, I was like, I'm not going to be a diva about this, so I just went to like the closest hospital in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and it, like, I probably should have been more of a diva about it, because I swear everything went wrong. Like, they missed my vein when they were putting in the IV, and my hand blew up like a balloon. Like,
no.
And then I'm to this day, I swear they didn't do the epidural right, because I felt every single moment of that pain. And like, when they put the needle in, like, my body jerked on one side and then it got numb, and I was like, I don't think that's supposed to happen.
I didn't actually feel the epidural at all. She said I got the good doctor, but we were running spine to spine, so it felt like he was coming out of my ass.
Oh man.
So like, I didn't feel anything in my vagina.
That is how it feels.
All of it in my ass. I was like, I'm having this kid out of my ass.
And he's been a pain.
That's what it probably was when they were checking it. And they're like, he's still like a negative one. I should have been like, you should stick your finger in my asshole and see if he's there.
Did I mention this is the Read Me Romance podcast?
I think so. After the diet cut.
If we're talking about sticking a finger up the ass, you know it's the Read Me Romance podcast.
Well, I was going to ask too about, so at what point did you know you were going into labor? Like, did you feel, I never felt contractions, because mine was the same way as Tessa. My first daughter was 2 weeks over, and so I had to have a scheduled C-section, and then with my second, they just scheduled it, like, 2 weeks before, or a week before, or whatever. So I never felt it.
I went into labor 2 weeks earlier. 2 weeks early, I went in and they were like, well, it's really not time. And they gave me this medicine to take.
He was so big.
I know. And they gave me this medicine to take, and I never went back into labor. So they had to schedule my induction. They scheduled the induction, and then they showed me, they were like, if your water doesn't break by noon, we're going to break it. Did they show you the tool they used to break it?
No.
Oh my God.
It's like a long thing with a hook, but luckily it broke on my own. Like, I thought I peed myself. I like went to get up and I was like, oh. I like looked to my friend Kristen. I was like, I think I just peed myself. And she's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. And I stood up and it just went everywhere. I was like, oh, that's not pee. That's brown and blood. Oh,
gross. No, they had to, they like put some weird like pill up there. And
what? To break your water?
To like induce me. I swear it was like a little tablet they stuck up there. And then they had to do it again 12 hours later. But I swear so many people had their fingers in my vagina that day. It was like they kept changing shifts and it was just a new person every time. They would walk in without even saying hello and just shove their fingers up there.
I had the really weird experience. Like college. That sounds amazing. I hated it because I never got to felt what labor was like. I mean, I say I hate it, but I'm probably super thankful being on this side of it. My first daughter, like, she never made any progress. Like, my body was like, we're holding this baby for the next 24 years. Like, there's no need for her to come out. So, but I had the weird thing where I lost weight when I was pregnant. I was eating everything, but like my body for it, like I am from sturdy British, like, DNA, where you're like, yes, you're gonna bear 12 children, like, this is what your body's built for, like, you're good to go plow the fields while you do it. like I lost like 30 pounds when I was pregnant. I weighed less the day I went into labor than I did the day I got pregnant.
That's,
it was
wild.
The weirdest fucking thing happened the second time too. It was like, whatever that hormone is, the HCG or whatever, it's like that just like ratcheted up when I got pregnant. So for whatever reason, it, like, pregnancy really agreed with me.
No My wonder vagina she had was two. Like,
do what?
I said, no wonder she had two. Me and Tessa, I
know.
Like,
one and, we're in the one and done club.
I know. And, like, the thing that was weird, too, was that, like, I was super sensitive down there, like, the entire pregnancy, like, to, like, a degree where it was like, I don't even want to pee. Because it was like, I was so sensitive. I don't know if that happened to you guys too.
I can't remember that. Like,
but yeah, so.
Oh.
It was.
I think this is the perfect conversation to have right before Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. That's
we just
true.
Got on this naturally, but what are you guys doing for Mother's Day?
It's next weekend, right? It's not this weekend.
It will be the weekend after this airs.
Oh, so. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe the weekend before. We did a Friday no, episode. It's the weekend yeah. before. Yep. Before.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
what'd you do for Mother's Day?
What'd you do for Mother's Day? Yeah, I talked to the lady that was doing my nails yesterday, and I said, like, what would be your perfect Mother's Day? And she was like, if everybody left me alone. And I was like, fucking A, right. I was like, that is the best Mother's Day gift. So if there's dudes listening to this, like, and Mother's Day's passed, take note for next year. Just get out of the fucking house. Take the kids, get out of the fucking house. Leave them alone.
Some moms have to be forced, you know? Like, some moms won't, like, I don't know if you guys have the same thing, but, like, I have mother's guilt about everything all the time.
Yes.
And, like, I almost feel guilty going out and doing stuff just for myself and, like, leaving my husband at home, like, for hours on end. Like, I'm like, I should be home doing stuff and helping out.
Yeah.
Just force them out. Like, tell them they're not allowed to come back till 5 o'clock. Do something like that. Like, really make them do it, because... We're talking
and
to the three guys
up,
listening.
Yeah, I was going to say, the four guys that are listening, if you fucked up and you didn't do this on Mother's Day, you can redo it this weekend. You don't have to wait till Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them do it. You know what? Wives, women, listen to this podcast. Take this snippet and just play it for your husband. Say, you know what? Listen to these girls. Listen right now.
You guys say this now, though. Mm-hmm. Wait till yours are older.
Yeah.
And then they never want to be around you anyway. So you're like, come back over here. They're all in their rooms with the doors closed. And
Mackenzie's getting there, actually, already.
We're not going to have doors on our rooms when they get to be teenagers.
I thought about that the other day. It's only been this last, like, 3 or 4 months. Everybody's shutting their doors.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, do I knock, right?
No, just bust it open. See what they're doing. Be nosy.
Definitely not.
Well, I want them to know they're coming. Like, I give, like, a 1-2. I'm like, it's mom. Click, click, and then open. Because I don't want to walk in on anything.
I know, right?
And I'm just like, but everybody shuts the doors now.
Mackenzie, like, she goes right up the stairs to her room now when she gets home from school. And it takes me, like, a half an hour to, like, get her to... Like, she just wants to be alone and, like, decompress for half an hour. Which is, like, exactly what I like to do. So I just let her do it. And when my husband's home, he's just like, Mackenzie, calm down, Mackenzie. And I'm like, just leave her alone for a little while. Like, he doesn't understand it, you know? I'm like, just let her just... film a fake YouTube video in her room for 5 minutes. Jeez. That's what she does. She's like, hey guys. I'm like, who are you talking to? She's just like, a fake YouTube crowd. Okay.
Aww, that's sweet though. But yeah, maybe when they get a little bit older, I'll want my kids to be around. But like, so for Mother's Day, generally, I have to go to my in-laws because my husband likes to see his mom on Mother's Day. And we got in this argument 1 year where I was like, she's not my mom. This is my day too. I shouldn't have to go. And we got in a huge fight about it, and he left without me and took the kids. So, I don't know. Like, since so then, I'm like,
that's what you wanted.
I know, but I don't want it to be because I bitch about it. Yeah, I don't want to fight about it. Like, I just want him to understand that, you know, rationally, I should be able to enjoy my day as well. I would rather paint my bedroom that weekend, you know, instead of, like, going. But the compromise this year is, like, that we're going to go to the beach. We're all going to meet there. So, I mean, it's kind of like, he's like, you can go to the beach all day if you want. Like, I'll take care of the kids, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, so I'll just take a book and go. But it's still one of those things, like, I hate it because I don't want to be, like, I don't want to be that bitch about it, and I don't want to be resentful, and I don't want there to be, like, these festering, like, feelings of, you know, anger, because he wants to be with his mom. Like, I understand it, but at the same time, I'm selfish. So it's like, how do I balance this, you know?
He should go be with his mom.
But it's like 3.5 hours away, so it's a whole weekend that he'd have to go. And if he took the kids, like,
you
know,
pack some lunches for you?
I know, right? Even though he's great, he's so great with our kids. Like, I can leave and I never have to worry. But it's still a lot, you know, to take on two little kids by yourself. And, you know, he gets stressed, like, when he's around his family for a long period of time because it's a little chaotic. And, you know, it's kind of like the holidays. Everybody's stressed. And so, you know, there's all these other factors. And I go back to the mom guilt that you were talking about, Tessa, where it's like, I should go, I should help out, I should suck it up, like, I should, you know, be a better partner. And that's what I keep telling myself, like, just be a better partner, don't be so selfish, when I just want to be like, God damn it, leave me the fuck alone. Like, yeah. That's what I want to say. So, like, I can't, I don't know, there's just, it's such a hard thing to, like, you know what? If you have this figured out, please write it in an email. Send it to readmeromance@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you have it, if you have figured out how to be the perfect wife and mother, send us your tips.
Yeah,
to you.
Tell us your tips. Tell us your tips. You know, I was actually thinking about this morning. I was cleaning up downstairs after the kids went to school, and I noticed that, like, I was packing away, like, their paper and crayons and stuff, and I was like, you know, one of the things I feel like I really did right as a mom was not giving them coloring books. Like, we just gave them blank paper, and now they don't want coloring books. They don't really like them, because it's like they like to come up with their own ideas and their own pictures, and I feel like, you know what, if you have a little kid, that's a good tip. Just give them blank paper, because I feel like they're just so much more creative.
Or a journal.
Yeah.
I find it's been, especially if you have a boy, like, it might be a good idea to give him a journal. They're always talking about how boys, like, really suppress their feelings because they don't feel like they can express themselves and still be masculine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always think I want to give my nephew a journal. But I've given a couple to Mackenzie and I'm like, I won't read it. You just write down what you're feeling in your journal and mm-hmm. it's all for you.
Well, how is she doing since camp? That was something I wanted to follow up with because it's been a week. Like, how is she doing since then?
She's asserting herself a lot more. Like, I feel like she really feels like she wants to take agency over, because it's like her body, you know, like me coming at her and being like, okay, we need to change this device, we need to do this. She's like, no, I don't want to do that right now. She's like being very vocal about what she does and doesn't want to do. So I'm just trying to, like, you know, I don't know how to you can't discipline a child over something that's medical. It just doesn't, you know, like, it's really difficult to balance that, like being a mother doing what's best for her, but also, like,
not smothering her.
Well, I don't really smother her over it. I try to, like, make it seem like it's just like a separate thing from her. It's not, she's not diabetes. She's just Mackenzie, and she has diabetes, right? But, like, it's difficult, like, when she refuses to do things that I know she needs to do for her body to be healthy, to not go, well, then you can't watch TV. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's hard. You can't do that because it's, but anyways, it's all right. We're getting there.
It's something that I'm sure, like, will take time.
Yeah.
But has she, like, been able to communicate with the friend she made when she was there?
They text in the mornings. She has a friend that she made at camp named Vivian, and they text each other every morning. Like, even if it's just an emoji,
so
it's just, I think it's just like a way of letting each other know that they're there. And then I also started an email. I got an email list together of all the parents before I left the camp, and now we email. So that's been cool for me too. And an email with Anton. He's on the email. He's on the email list. You can hear his accent through the emails. But let's talk about what we really came to talk about, which is Endgame spoilers. Do you guys want to talk about
I haven't seen
Did you watch Avengers Endgame, Mel?
No, I haven't had time. Oh, okay. My husband was out of time. I know out of town, but I know what happened.
Okay, I was just kidding. We're not really going to spoil it, but I thought...
Okay, good.
It was masterpiece, I thought.
I actually watched the first Captain Marvel. Oh. I did last weekend. Yeah,
there's only one so far.
It took me 2 days, but it was a 3-day rental, and I got it done before I had to turn.
What'd you think?
It was really good. Like, you know, I had a lot of questions when it ended, but I can see why people really like him. Like, he really is just a Captain America. Like, he's...
Oh, Captain America you watched.
What did I say?
You guys said Captain Marvel. I was like, well, you clearly didn't watch the movie if you think it's a dude.
No, sorry. That's the first one is Captain America. The second one's Captain Marvel. That's technically to follow the timeline. That's the order you're supposed to watch.
It's true because they take place in different hers takes place in the 90s.
And it's like right after this one. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm watching them based on that order. And I think Captain Marvel like comes to DVD like next week or something.
It does, I think.
So I'm trying to wait until that one comes out and then I'm going to watch it and then go the following order. So.
All right, cool. Okay. So let's talk. Okay. I started talking about Molly O'Keefe's books, and then we got sidetracked by birth stories.
By a bad baby.
Yeah.
Not a bad baby.
By just the title of her book. But Bad Neighbor and Baby Come Back are like two sisters, and I love sisters in books. It's just, especially when they're really authentic, like Molly writes. So one of them is like the beauty queen that everyone loves, and then one of them is like the hard worker sister that like gives up everything for her good-looking sister, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they love each other despite that dynamic. They love each other very much. So then when we come upon our heroine, she has quit her job, like sold, I think she sold her condo so that she could give her sister money to go on the run. So now So now, because the sister is like in danger of the mafia.
The mafia.
The mafia. Like, or something similar to the mafia.
Yeah.
Organized crime. And so when we come upon the heroine from the first book, Bad Neighbor, she's like living in like a really bad rundown neighborhood, like in like a really tiny apartment, is like super attracted and like has an instant connection with her neighbor who is like a street fighter. Oh, he's so hot.
I like that.
The whole book just crackles. Like there's so much sexual tension and it, you know, I love a woman in peril story too. So Bad Neighbor is a really good one. I would definitely check out from Molly O'Keefe if you're
I feel like I've heard
keen.
Of that one. Yeah, or like we've talked about it or something. Like it sounds familiar, but I like it. I met Molly O'Keefe for the first time at Skywarn. I feel like I've said that 80 million times since we've started this podcast. But at Sky's author mastermind thing, I met so many amazing authors for the first time. Yeah, like it was like I never met her before or anything. And one of the first times I met her, we were at it was between like classes or whatever, like there was something going on and we were all sitting at a table just having like coffee. And she just was like, hey, can I just like, you know, group pull the table real quick? I'm thinking about doing this and this and this. What are you guys' input? Like just out in the open, like asked a round table discussion of people she didn't know, but that were authors. And she was just like, hey, what do you think about this? And to be someone who had, and I think I've even said this when we first talked about having her on the podcast, but to be someone who's been around so long and has, you know, like had a lot of success in romance and, you know, has created her own like presence. I was so surprised that she was just so willing to, you know, not only, you know, maybe change it up or try something new or to try to stay current and relevant, but to ask her fellow authors like, hey, give me some advice. What's working for you? Like that just, it blew my mind at how shocked I was by that. Like, I shouldn't be shocked.
It's funny how, like, you go to those things, those conventions and stuff, because you're supposed to do stuff like that. And then when someone actually does it, it's, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah,
you're like,
oh,
you're
fuck?
Doing what you're supposed to do at these conventions.
Well, and most people are really guarded because they feel like, oh, well, this is a secret. Like, everybody's doing what you're doing. And if they're not, they're probably doing it better than you're doing it. So don't be afraid to ask something like that. Like, that. We're always so willing to give advice for anybody who asked a question, but it's so seldom that somebody asked the fucking question.
They never ask.
No, and Molly O'Keefe like just sat down at the table like, well, tell me, you know, you guys are like Sorelli, why don't you tell me how you're doing this? And we were like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Like, you know,
well, if it's me,
I'm super I'm super quiet, but if you ask me anything about reading and romance, a book, about what I'm doing, I can go on for years.
Yeah. It's true. Well, I feel like I'm just now getting comfortable enough to ask you guys questions about what you're doing, because I'm always like, well, I don't want them to think I'm like trying to like, you know, like use what they know to my advantage. Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, I mean, I think that's a valid concern, though. You wouldn't want you don't want to hop in too soon or the wrong way, but like.
Well, and to be honest, I think it's a rare occasion where somebody actually tries to use it to your man. I had an author one time where, you know, I was sharing her stuff, and then when I didn't share a new release, she messaged me to remind me she had a new release, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, like, oh, let me know. And so I shared it, and then when I didn't do it again, and she did it, I was like, right, we're not talking any other time except for when you have a new release. Like, this is a little awkward.
Yeah.
But that's like one single instance in years and years and years of sharing releases, you know, of like sharing other authors' books and stuff. Like, it's a rarity that, you know, an author really tries to take advantage of you in this situation. I mean, you hear horror stories all the time, but to me, in my personal experience, that doesn't happen, you know. So
you can get advice from another author and employ it almost exactly the same way and have it not work, though. That's the thing. It's like there's just a synergy that some authors it works for and some it doesn't. And like, you know.
Mel said that before, too, when we first started writing. She was like, why doesn't everybody do this? It's so easy. And it's like, it's really not. You know, and the longer we do it, the more we realize, like, it's stupid to say, like, we have a gift. But it's not. It's definitely, like, it's a project, I feel like. You know, it's an ongoing project that we're constantly, or this beast that we're feeding all the time, you know. For us, like, we're just good at it. You know, we work well together. We have each other's strengths and each other's weaknesses. Like, we pair well together. And our success is, you know, worked very hard for. And so, I think over time, we've realized that. And, you know, some authors don't understand that concept. They're like, well, if I do what Alex Riley's doing, if I write these short, filthy books, and I put them in Kindle Unlimited, and I put them 99 cents, and I put out 4 books a month, I'm going to have the same success they will. And it's a great formula, and it's a great idea, but if there is not the passion, you know, the commitment, if there's not the fun of it, if that's not behind it, your readers will feel it, and they'll know, like, this is just a cash grab. Like, that's what I feel like. From my experience, from seeing other authors try to attempt it, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's one thing to be said about, you know, like Molly did, you know, to ask genuine questions because she wants to be successful. Like, those are the authors you want to lift up and help, because she's just trying to figure out, like, what's the best way for me to market this new book that I wrote and I love? Like, that's a great question to ask an author.
You can genuinely feel, though, as well, that Molly really does love the books that she writes. So that's somebody that you want to help out, you know, and that's somebody that you want to recommend.
Yeah, and she writes what she wants to. You know, she's not, you can tell she doesn't write it for people. It's like she finds a story, she really feels it, she's into it, and she's like, you know, I'm going to write it. Fuck it if nobody else likes it. And those are the best books.
Those are the best books.
The best.
I have her bio here. I'm going to read it really quick, and then I think we should do, like, one or two listener emails, and then we can send everybody on their way. Okay, Molly O'Keefe has always known she wanted to be a writer, except when she wanted to be a florist or a chef, and the brief period of time when she considered being a cowgirl. And once she got her hands on some romances, she knew exactly what she wanted to write. She published her first Harlequin romance at age 25 and hasn't looked back. She loves exploring every character's road towards happily ever after. Originally from a small town outside Chicago, she went to university in St. Louis, where she met and fell in love with the editor of her school newspaper. They followed each other around the world for several years and finally got married and settled down in Toronto, Ontario. They welcomed their son into their family in 2006, their daughter in 2008. When she's not at the park or cleaning up the toy room, Molly is working hard on her next novel, trying to exercise, stalking Tina Fey on the internet, and dreaming of the day she can finish a cup of coffee without interruption.
Good luck
with
that.
I feel you.
Let me know how you do
it. I feel you on that, Molly. Okay, so let's see. I've got some emails here. I feel like they're all just different subjects. Like, we've just thrown so many subjects at people. I'm going to go ahead and read a camp horror story. I have a camp horror story, actually, from our featured author this week.
I'm so excited. Did people just send these in, like, after you asked for them, or I posted
in headquarters. There's been some coming in all week, yeah.
I posted in headquarters because I was like, I don't know if Tessa asked this, but now I want them.
I did ask, but you added a funny gif to it, and then more started coming in.
That's what did it.
So this is from Molly O'Keefe, our featured author this week, her summer camp horror story. Got my period at summer camp, Camp Black Hawk in northern Wisconsin. It was a Girl Scout camp, and 99% nine of my memories are amazing, but not the period from hell. I think it was the second time I got my period, and the first time, it was like a little girl period. The second time, though, oh my God. Think abattoir, which is a slaughterhouse. Think first period back after having a baby. Think there's no way a 13-year-old girl should have this kind of period.
No.
But I did, on a 2-person sailboat, in the middle of the lake, in my Speedo and an orange life jacket. I went to camp every year with my best friend, and if she had been on the boat with me, it might not have been so scary, but no, total stranger. We were young and new sailors, and I was so sick and so embarrassed that it took us forever to get back to the dock. I kept trying to splash off the blood, but there was so much. And by the time we did the sail, by the time we got back, the sailboat looked like a double homicide scene. And the girl I was with was crying, which I remember thinking was a little much considering it was me bleeding all over the place. The counselor's faces were riding the spectrum between complete and totally total sympathy and a little grossed out. I got sent to the nurse where I ate a candy bar.
Oh, bless her heart. Oh, that's so horrific.
Oh my God.
Oh. God bless her.
Okay, the next one is, oh, I don't know if I'm a camp horror story as well, and this is the reason I'm hesitant to send my child to overnight camp, one of the reasons, because of shit like this.
Yeah.
Hi, lady podcasters. I want to start off by saying I love the podcast. All three of you are amazing, and I love all your books. I found you through Ella Fox. Woo woo. And I'm so happy that you're a part of my morning commute each day. My camp horror story is from sixth grade camp in 1985. Ours was always held in February here in Michigan, which makes sense. Send them out to the fucking bitter cold in fucking Michigan.
Like in 6 feet of snow. Yeah. Let's go to camp, kids.
As you can imagine, camp was cold and full of snow. It was all good until they decided that one of the activities would be to pile up a ton of snow and then dig an igloo into it. Once it was ready, they had a small group of us go inside to see what it was like. Again, all fine until I got inside. They apparently thought it would be loads of fun to put us in there and then tell us they were going to cover up the entrance so we could see how the so-called heat would stay inside and insulate us. Just before standing in front of our only escape route, my teacher peeks in and says, "By the way, if this collapses on you, we will all have to dig really quick to get you out before you suffocate and die."
Stop!
She then blocks the hole by standing in front of it with another teacher. Yours truly then proceeded to go into full-on claustrophobic panic, crying and hyperventilating, and the kid close to the exit started banging on this bitch from hell with her sidekick's boots, and the rest of the kids were screaming so they would move. I can't stay.
Holy shit.
I know. I'm like, but this is like, they're probably like 17 years old, these counselors. Do you know what I mean?
This is 1985.
85. Like, it's lucky lucky any of you survived.
I know, right? Any of you. Fuck you. I'm from the 80s.
No, but I was 1 year old in 1985. 1 year old. 1 year old in 1985. So, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't feel like I survived the 80s because I was so young. Like, mm-hmm. You can't say for sure how long it took, but my traumatized memory, it was forever. I scrambled my way out and my best friend consoled me and calmed me down. The teacher was a giant ass about it and told me to walk around to catch my breath. To this day, I'm extremely claustrophobic. I have no memory of being that way before camp. I can't stand elevators in small spaces. It sucks. Oh, the joys of camp trauma. Thank you again for all your amazing work.
Oh, wow. That sucks.
That's what I fear the most, though, is like that kind of stuff happening, you know, when you're not there to like control it.
Somebody traumatizing your kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, the control issues, but go ahead. Did you ever see that movie Indian Summer?
I feel like I have, but I don't remember.
It's got
too much about it.
Okay, all right. The chick that was in, we talked about the movie Closer, Diane Lane.
Mm-hmm.
She's in it, along with amazing actors in it. But it's about like these grown ups. They go back to camp. The old guy that owned the camp is closing it down, so he has them back for one last summer. Just these guys, and it's like about their memories and stuff of the camp they were. But the camp is beautiful, and I ended up looking it up. It's like Camp Minnetonka, but it's in Canada. You can go there for 3 months at school. You can send, or 3 months during the summer, you can send your kid there for 3 months.
Jeez. Wow.
And I was like, can you imagine? I mean, I guess in a way, like, I could see, like, slowly progressing to that, because at some point, like, if they go to college or whatever, they're going to be away from you, you know, and this could essentially test the waters. You know, that was what somebody mentioned in Read Me Roommates headquarters, our Facebook group. Somebody was like, I didn't go to camp, but I think it would have been a good experience to have before just going away to college, and that being the first time I'm ever away from my family for an extended period of time.
A lot of people say that, you know, like, summer camp is life-changing for them. Like, they meet their best friends there. They look forward to it all year. They feel normal there. They feel like they can be themselves there. Because really, camp is about being silly and getting dirty and
just
TPing the boys' cabins.
Like, silly games and having fun. Yeah. And like, it really just allows kids to like not have to be cool for a little while, you know?
Yeah. And to be their own person. Because a lot of times I think, you know, kids get stuck in a rut when they're in like, you know, if you know a kid from the time they're in kindergarten through high school, you know, you have a certain expectation of them and people see you a certain way. But if you go to camp, you go away, you know, these people don't know you. You get to be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun experience. So, I don't know, I remember looking up that camp and thinking, like, holy shit, like 3 months. But then I'm like, well, you know, I mean, depending on their age, they're going to be away from you that long pretty soon.
You don't have to do the whole 3 months. You can do, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's in Canada, though. So, like, I guess you could just go visit.
I'd fucking get a motel, like, next door and just be like, I'll see you later. I'm going home now. And then I'd just stay in the motel and just, like, peeking her over the fence. Okay, I have one more sex email here. A sex email. Leah messaged me yesterday and she was like listening to the podcast week with Naima Simone. And I read an email from a woman, or quote unquote woman, who was talking about how like her husband would like slam his like 12-inch dick down her throat and like left bruises on her mouth. And she was, and Leah was like, do you think a man wrote that? And I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So if that was a man, I apologize that they infiltrated our bubble here with their dirty, dirty blowjob story.
I know, because after you read it, you were like, you're just bragging. And I was like, yeah, that kind of just was that. So, yeah.
Okay, but this one definitely is a woman. Hey, Tessa, Leah, and Mel, loves your podcast. Huge fan. Writing in with a funny story. I'm not sure if you've talked about this subject, but you should. Injuries during sex. And I have a good one. Excuse me for the TMI ahead of time. My husband was going down on me. You know how I know this is from a woman? Because she apologized.
For no reason. Yep, for no reason.
For no
whatsoever.
Fucking reason at all.
Yep, exactly.
My husband was going down on me, and right before I orgasm, he blows strawberries on my clit.
Oh, like raspberries. Maybe that's what she means, right?
She calls them strawberries, which is amazing, by the way. Only this time he gave me no warning whatsoever. I get pretty jerky when I orgasm, and he always holds me down usually, but this time my knee shot out and popped him right in the nose.
No!
I heard it crack, but I was in the midst of an orgasm, and he didn't stop blowing till it was over. That's a good man.
Wow.
His fucking nose is broken, and he didn't stop.
Fuck yeah.
When he pulled away, I could see the blood funneling out of his nose. It was everywhere.
No.
I saw him dart into the bathroom holding his nose, leaving a stream of blood on my floor. I wanted to feel bad, but I couldn't stop laughing. When he came back, he was proud of himself, and he said, I'm hog tying you down from now on. And yes, ladies, it's even better tied down. I'm not sure whose benefit he thought it was for when offering to tie me down, but it's definitely mine.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Not like
I could see doing that though.
In our own.
Yeah. Oh my god, that poor dude.
Okay, so I think that's it for now. Let's send them into the first installment of our Second Chance by Molly O'Keefe.
Male.
And we'll talk to you guys on the other side. Bye.
Bye.
One last chance. Chapter 1. Jack. Natalie was here, in Dusty Creek, Texas, in my bar. I hadn't even walked through the door of the bar, but I knew she was inside. The air smelled of gun smoke and all the birds had gone silent, like there was an apex predator in the streets of Dusty Creek. Also, her Ford Bronco with the dent in the driver's side door was out front. The dent was from our senior prom, when we'd been T-boned on our way to the dance. The last time I saw Natalie had been a year ago, when my dad was in the hospital. She'd walked into his hospital room like she owned the place. like we were all just waiting for her to show up. And God Almighty, there'd been a time when my heart started to beat when she walked in the door. A year since I'd seen my wife. 6 months before that. 2 months before that. 5 before that. We'd been apart longer than we'd ever been together, my wife and I. And now she was in my goddamned bar. I pushed open the door, expecting to see Bea and Natalie getting all cozy. Those two would hit it off like a brush fire, and I did not need that in my life. My business partner and my wife getting chummy was a nightmare scenario. We'd finished renovations a few months ago, and it was real nice inside. It looked like the kind of place Natty and me dreamed of opening together. Classy, but comfortable. Rustic and elegant at the same time, with good food and a great drinks menu. The bar had everything but the good food part, but I was working on that. Inside, it was just Natalie sitting there, her red hair a warning flag. When she turned, her green gaze slid right through me, reminding me very clearly of what I was trying to forget. I was a one-woman man. From biology in my junior year when the new girl walked in and my whole life changed. One woman. Her. And she broke my damn heart. Natalie? Jack? Her lip kicked up just a little and I looked away out of pure self-preservation.
Quite a place you got here. It's beautiful.
She looked around at the high ceilings and big windows, the refinished oak floors that glowed in the sunlight, the 100-year-old mahogany bar I'd bought at an auction sale. Thanks.
Love the name,
she said with that sassy grin of hers, eyes all twinkly. I appreciate that. Aren't you cooking for the stars in Los Angeles?
Paris, actually.
She went back to Paris and I didn't even know. God, that felt all kinds of wrong. Good for you, I said, and she shrugged one shoulder like nothing mattered. Not my bar, not her cooking for the stars. Paris, Los Angeles, marriage. Everything was a goddamn lark to her. My temper boiled. You signed those papers? I asked. Same thing I'd been asking her once a month by email for a year.
Nope.
Natalie. Come on. She stood up from the bar and I took a step back. The force field around her, between us, kept me a safe distance away. Natalie was tall, just an inch or so shorter than me, and I'd always liked that about her. How we looked each other in the eye. She'd been a swimmer in high school, and I used to like the way she always smelled vaguely of chlorine, and her hair was a little green on the ends, and her shoulders were molded out of muscle. And her ass was the finest in all of Texas. I liked how she counted on her fingers and put hot sauce on everything she ate, and how she laughed and kissed. Yeah, I used to love a lot of things about her. She leaned her hip against the bar and tossed that hair over her shoulder.
I heard you and your business partner were in Austin a few weeks ago looking for some kitchen talent.
You heard that, did you?
I got spies in all the old neighborhoods, Jack. You should know that.
More sass from her. And once upon a time, I would lap up all that attitude and ask for more. But those days were long gone. And you dropped your fancy job to come stand in my bar and... What? Mock me? Tell me what a mistake I'm making? Have a good laugh?
No, of course not. I think you know me better than that.
She stared at me for a real long time, and I told myself that I was immune to that gravitational pull of hers. Sure, she wore a pair of tight jeans and beat-up cowboy boots, a green shirt that made her hair and eyes and skin look like something I needed in my life, and that red hair. Natalie had always been the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen, and the cruelest. I don't know you at all, I said. And unless you're here to sign those papers. From her bag, she pulled the stack of papers with the blue cover sheet and slapped it down on the bar.
I got your damn papers.
Then what are you waiting for? Natalie, end this shit between us. It's time. It's way past time.
She used her thumb to try and press down a crease at the corner.
I have a deal for you.
No. 2 years ago, I'd begged her. Stay. We'll figure out another way to get you to culinary school that doesn't involve your parents. Please, stay here with me. Don't go. Listen. No. I pushed my way past her force field and grabbed her purse and then her elbow, ignored the tensile strength of her arm under my palm, the softness of her skin, the heat of her. Yeah, I ignored it real good.
Don't manhandle me, Jack.
She snapped her elbow out of my hand. Then don't fuck me around, Natalie.
I'm not, Jack. I swear I'm not.
And because I was a fool, I didn't jump right back out of her gravitational field. I didn't get away fast enough, and she put her hand to my cheek, her fingertips in my hair, and my blood stopped in my veins. Time stopped in its tracks. I was 16, making out in the back of that Bronco. I was 22 on my wedding night. I was 25 watching her walk away. I was 30, filing for divorce. All of it in that moment, in that touch. So much history. So much unbearable history.
I'm not here to fuck you around, she whispered.
Her breath smelled like the hall's cough drops she ate like candy, especially when she was nervous. Why are you here? I stepped back and broke the connection.
I want the job.
What?
The kitchen job. Here.
The laughter was uncontrollable. I threw my head back and howled at the ceiling.
I'm not joking,
she said, all starchy and stiff. Yeah, I get that. I'm laughing because you think I might give it to you.
This was our dream, babe. Yours and mine.
You need to leave. I would not listen to one word out of her beautiful mouth about our dream. Not one goddamned word. A man had his limits, and that was mine. She jumped away from me and I stood there holding her purse. The divorce papers, a year old at this point, curled on the bar in the humidity.
Hear me out,
she said. No. I crossed the room, opened the door, and chucked her purse out onto the sidewalk.
That was a $1,600 Fendi bag, she said.
You better go get it. I even held the door open for her, because I was that kind of husband.
Here's my deal. You hire me. 2 weeks. No pay. If it doesn't work out, I'll sign the papers and be gone. Out of your life.
It's not going to work out. So let's just cut to the chase and sign those papers.
The only way I'll sign them is if you let me work here for 2 weeks. That's the only way.
My blood pressure was skyrocketing. It felt like my eyes might pop out of my head. But I saw the light at the end of the dark tunnel I'd been living in for way too long. The end of us. It was here. If you quit, you sign.
Agreed.
She said it so fast I had to believe she didn't understand what I was saying. So I spelled it out real clear. I'm going to make it hell, Natalie. You gotta know that.
I know,
she said. The years had been good to her. But they'd still been years. I could see them in the corners of her eyes and beside her mouth, laugh lines, because Natalie had always been a laugher. Damn, I thought before I could stop myself. I missed you. She put her hand out to shake, and bracing myself for the feel of her, I grabbed it. Fine, I said.
You won't regret it.
She could not be this delusional. I pulled her in a little closer, felt the warmth of her body, and my blood thickened. I didn't just miss her, not after all these years. I wanted her. In my bones, I wanted her. In the pound of my heart, the sudden twitch and pulse of my cock. I wanted her like I'd always wanted her. I imagined spinning her around, bending her over this bar, and relieving this ache I'd been carrying around for the 11 months and 12 days since I'd been inside of her. She smiled at me, knowing and coy.
We can do that, too,
she breathed. Her minty breath brushed over my lips. I missed you, Jack. I missed you inside of...
I dropped her arm like it burned me and stepped away before the fire between us caught and spread and burned everything down. I already am regretting it, I told her. And it's only a matter of time before you will, too.
We'll see,
she said, all twinkly and bright, like she wasn't affected. Natty, I said. Why are you doing this? The sun lit her up from the other side, and it looked like she was glowing.
Because I never stopped loving you, Jack, and I know you didn't stop loving me either.
Chapter 2. Jack. She was there the next day when I came in at 10. I could hear the hum of voices on the other side of the door before I even walked through it. B, Kimmy, and Natalie. They were laughing, chatting away like they'd been friends for years. The Natalie effect. Used to be we couldn't go anywhere without her making friends with waitresses and taxi drivers and dog walkers on the street. I used to love the Natalie effect. But now it just made me crazy. Everything was going to make me crazy today. My dreams had been haunted by my wife. I'd slept like shit, beat off in the shower to the memory of her hands on my skin, and then put on my nicest shirt with the pearl snaps, and hated myself a little bit for wanting to look good for her. I pushed open the door and, just as I'd imagined, they were standing at the bar, each of them with a menu. Mark, the poor kid I'd hired to work the kitchen after the last chef quit for something bigger in the city, was sitting among those women like he'd been struck by lightning. The guy didn't know what to do.
Jack!
B, my business partner, cried when I walked in. She had her Rosie the Riveter look going today. It was always a crowd favorite.
You didn't tell me you hired, like, a real live chef.
Yeah.
Jack, she cried again. This is a big deal. She,
B did some kind of jazz hands thing around Natalie,
is a big deal.
Yeah.
Don't mind him,
B said to Natty with a hearty eye roll. Natty was wearing a trim white chef's jacket with her name embroidered on the sleeve and a pair of dark jeans. Her trusty cowboy boots were still on her feet, and all that red hair was pulled back in a tight bun. She looked about as official as it was possible for a chef to look and still somehow look entirely like herself. Being proud of her was something I couldn't control. I'd never been able to. There was a time I'd walked around wild with pride for her, wild with love and desire and gratitude that that beautiful, amazing woman picked me.
He's chronically unenthusiastic,
B said.
Don't let him get you down.
I won't,
Natty answered.
They're making a lot of changes to the menu,
poor Mark said.
Good changes,
Kimmy, our server, chimed in.
Well, I don't know about all those salads,
Mark said.
We kept the queso, the wings, and the nachos,
B said,
but we elevated them.
Elevated, I said, like I didn't know what that meant. It meant calling the mayo aioli. I beelined for the coffee pot because I was going to need a fuck ton of caffeine to get through this.
You're gonna love it. Look,
B put a piece of paper in front of my nose.
This is the new menu. Three mains. Tons of fresh appetizers.
Fresh?
Yeah, Jack. Things that don't come out of the fryer.
This crowd likes things that come out of the fryer.
This is our chance to get a new crowd,
B said.
We've got this beautiful new space and the same old drunks are coming in. Let's give something new a chance. Why did you hire her if you weren't going to use her?
I looked over B's head and caught Natalie's eye. Did you tell her? I asked Natalie.
Tell who what?
B asked. Natalie, I said more clearly, letting my anger take over. Did you tell her? B stepped away, blown back by the sudden force of my belligerence.
What's going on?
She's here for 2 weeks tops, and then she's leaving, I said.
Well,
B glanced between us.
Okay, but it's not a complicated menu, She can train Mark and we can adapt it or whatever. Right?
Right, Natty said, all bright and cheerful.
It's a real easy menu. And if I end up leaving in 2 weeks...
You're not even going to make it the 2 weeks, I said.
Jack!
B cried.
Why are you being jerkier than usual?
Did she tell you who she was? I asked B and Kimmy, even Mark, who looked like he wanted the ground to open up and swallow him whole.
Yep, she's Natalie, B said. The chef you hired.
Did she tell you who she was to me?
Jack, Natalie whispered. Don't.
Did this breath of fresh air tell you she was my wife? The air got so heavy, so dense, it was like a brick wall boxing us all in. B looked between us.
No,
she whispered. And she's only staying for 2 weeks, probably less if she walks away, which frankly is a thing she does. Natalie looked down at the bar, her cheeks flushing red.
Please,
she whispered.
Don't do this.
Do what? I asked and set my coffee down so hard it sloshed over the side of the cup. I'm just making sure everyone knows the score, so they don't get their hopes up, so they don't end up loving you only to have you leave. When she looked at me now, tears stood in her eyes. Her mouth was a thin, hard line. This is my wife, Natalie, I said right to her. She won't be staying. She never does. She stood up and grabbed the paper from the bar. Leaving already? I asked.
Going to the market, asshole, she snapped. We've got a restaurant to run.
She hit the door with both hands, like a gunshot right through my chest. B looked at me, wide-eyed.
You okay?
She asked. Make the changes, I said. Whatever she says. Just don't get used to her being around. I turned to the back room where it was mostly storage, but at least I could close the door and punch a few holes in the wall. But B got right in front of me.
As your business partner, you have to tell me what's going on. As your friend, you have to tell me if you're okay.
Kimmy and Mark both ran for high ground, but not B, and she wouldn't go until I told her what she wanted to know. She was a total headache that way. Natalie and I met in high school, and we got married when we were 22, I said, trying to stick to the cold, hard facts. Against her father's wishes. Her dad hated me, hated us, did everything short of shipping me to Australia to keep us apart.
Is he the guy who caught you having sex with his daughter and had you arrested?
I nodded, having forgotten that I'd told her about that night. The memory, so shocking, still had the power to take my breath away. Being led away in handcuffs from my crying, screaming, half-naked girlfriend. Awful. And then there was the time he threatened to kill me. Yeah, her dad had been a real piece of work. They were real religious and had a lot of money. And I was the dirty heathen scumbag who was going to ruin their daughter's perfect life. They didn't come to the wedding. They didn't talk to her for 2 years. And we were pretty fucking happy in Austin. Broke as shit, but happy. She was working in some kitchens, working her way up the chain at a couple of swanky places. I was managing a really popular bar and we were making plans. Big plans. Our plan had been this place. I'd run the bar, she'd run the kitchen. A place where the community came together. A town where we could buy some land, raise our family.
What happened?
B asked. Her mom got sick, real sick. Her father called and asked Natty for help, and she went. It was the right thing to do, and I supported her. We made it work long distance for a while. She'd come back to me for a few weekends. We'd meet halfway. Her dad made it very clear that I wasn't welcome in his house. And I made it very clear that I never planned on stepping foot in it. It went on like that for over a year. When her mother died, I thought it was over. I'd scrapped enough money together to buy this place and the land outside of town so we could finally get back to being us. Just her and me without her father and his bullshit.
But before she died, her mother paid for Natty to go to a fancy cooking school in France.
Why France?
Bea asked. Because it was the one furthest away from me, I guess.
And she went? Without you?
Yes, without me. I was broke after buying this place, and I couldn't afford to live in Paris while she was in school. I sure as hell wasn't going to live off a dime of her father's money. Before that night, me and Natty never fought. After that night, fighting was all we did. Stay with me, I'd begged.
Well, all expense paid cooking school in Paris is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity,
B said, and I shot her a dirty look. Rules of partnership said she needed to be on my side on this.
I'm just saying, there are two sides to every story.
Hardly matters anymore. I served her with divorce papers about a year ago.
And she hasn't signed them?
She will, at the end of these 2 weeks.
Jack.
I was done talking about Natty in the past. Come on, we got a bar to run.
Hey guys, we're back.
Hey.
Hi. So if you want the book that's connected to this book, Our Last Chance, Tycoon is from by Molly O'Keefe. It's free on Kindle Unlimited right now. And it takes place in the same world as this book, Our Last Chance. So you definitely want to grab that. I think you meet the couple later on in the book. It's like the girl that works at the bar and her like cowboy boyfriend, which fuck yeah. Cowboys. Molly O'Keefe is giving away a 2-month Audible membership. So go to readmeromance.com, click on our current audiobook, and you can enter to win that. And yeah, we talked about Bad Neighbor and Baby Come Back. So like, go snatch it all up, you guys. Molly has some great books out there and you definitely don't want to miss out on her. So be back tomorrow with more, unless you guys have a book out. Do you guys have a fucking book out today? Or
Wait, I don't know. What's today's day?
I think it's like the 13th.
So. I don't think we have anything this week. I think they get...
Yeah, it's the 13th of
May. Next week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think you guys had your cake books out come out last week, so...
Oh, my God, yes.
So at least 2 more days till you put another book out.
at least 2 days.
All right, guys. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Leah, tell them what to do.
Oh, yeah. Fuck your day up. Make today your bitch. Don't be a dick.
Bye. Read me romance.